This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly film and television podcast with a new episode available each week, available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. I'm Aaron Peterson, and I'm going to be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers, kind of to give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. For this episode, we're talking about the film One Last Night. One Last Night revolves around a first date. Alex and Zoe, they venture out to see a movie at a local theater, and after the film, the couple find themselves trapped inside the theater for an entire night. Their adventure starts out light and comical as they search for an escape and quickly find themselves falling for each other. But as they search for an escape, an unexpected twist abruptly changes the course of the night. I really enjoyed it. This is a very sweet and charming film, as you'll hear me say during this interview with the director. It's a small independent feature with some charming actors and an interesting story that does have a twist midway that I think will get your attention. Now, currently, it's playing at festivals. So right now, it debuted at the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and it will be rolling out to other film festivals as the year goes on. So keep your eye out for it in case you want to see it, which I think you will if you enjoy romantic comedies with a little twist to them. Now, for this episode, we are talking to the writer and director of One Last Night, Anthony Sabbe. Anthony stopped by to discuss his quest to become a filmmaker, why he needed to get this film made, and his journey to release. It's a really interesting story, and he seems like a really nice guy. He's so excited about his film finally getting released. At the time of this recording, he had actually just had his premiere, and you could tell he was on top of the world. Because, I mean, when you work hard on a film, sometimes we as the audience don't realize how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into that. And you can hear it in his voice that he is just elated to finally have people be able to see his movie. So without further ado, take a listen to my interview with the director of One Last Night, Anthony Sabbe, and be sure to look for the film near you.
Yeah, hi, this is Anthony Sabbe from One Last Night.
Well, welcome, Anthony. I know you just had your premiere at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. How was that?
Yeah. Well, we did our premiere, the world premiere this morning, and then we're doing the actual world premiere tomorrow night. But actually, we had a pretty cool turnout here this morning with a crowded audience and a crowded theater. So it was pretty fun. Very nerve-wracking, but pretty fun.
Was this your first time watching it with an audience?
The very first.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was the very first time. And so I was pretty much the only one with my co-producer who have watched the movie, and besides that, composer, of course. So basically it was pretty frightening, but we made it. So one down, one to go.
Oh, it's a very charming, sweet film. So you should be proud of it.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice.
First thing before we get into the movie, I always open with the same question. I want to know, when did you know you wanted to be involved in filmmaking? Was there a specific moment, or is it just a lifelong dream?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty funny story. When I was in high school, a friend of mine told me that I should join a theater class. So I started doing some theater, some improv, and to be very honest, I was terrible at it. So, but I still had to pursue the whole year, actually the 2 years. And at the end of the year, we had to direct a little play. And actually, I started directing the play myself, and I thought, I may be terrible at acting, but that's something I kind of want to explore, to direct, whether it's plays or movies or whatever. But that was still in high school, so I started doing, like, I guess, like a lot of future filmmakers, like little shorts with my little camera back then, and I applied to film school later on in Paris. Mm-hmm. Actually, no one knew about it in my family and my friends, because I don't come at all from an artistic I don't have an artistic background or family. So it was a little bit tricky to announce that to some people. But I'm very stubborn. So and now 10, 20, 15 years later, I'm still here. So I guess it was not that bad of a bad choice.
No, great choice. Was your family supportive about the decision?
Yeah, I mean, support is a bad. I would say support. I think, you know, like most of families, they want your good, and it's a very risky field, because there's not a lot of assurance in this job. I mean, you don't really know you want to do it, but that's pretty much all you know. So it's very it's not very secure, but. But at the end of the day, yeah, of course, I mean, they were pretty supportive, but scared, I guess, like any parents could be when you start doing like an artistic job that does not give you much security for the future. So But now I think it's all gone. I think it's all in the past. So, so yeah.
Well, you grew up abroad before you relocated to the U.S. Did you find filmmaking was a little more receptive for filmmakers in California versus Paris?
So it's very different, actually. In California, especially LA, well, where I live, I've been in LA for 10 years now. It's part of the culture. I mean, it's obviously what people know about. It's movies. I mean, LA is movies. So Paris, I mean, that's pretty funny because when you live in Paris and you tell someone that you're going to make a movie or that you work in the movie industry, it's suddenly, I mean, you're suddenly like their hero because it's so rare in a way. So, but when you come to LA and you say that, people just don't care about it. They're just like, oh yeah, another one. So, it's quite funny, but, I mean, we still have a great, movie industry in France, but way more spread out and, people don't only talk about movies as we do in LA. When you go to a dinner, you talk about movies, and you go to anywhere, you talk about movies because, yeah, so much part of the culture of Los Angeles. I mean, when you love movies at the same time, it's also very nice to be in an environment where people also love or at least pretend to love movies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely very different in the both cultures.
Well, I read your story in the press notes that inspired the film, and I thought it was entertaining all by itself. So would you mind telling the audience how One Last Night came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so a couple of years ago, I went on this date. That was actually a second date and not a first date, but with a girl that I barely knew because we only had one date, like a drink. And we decided to go to watch a movie, very old school date, but she was working during the day. So we go very late at night, like the last screening of the theater. Mm-hmm. And we go actually watch The Intern, the movie The Intern with De Niro and Hathaway. And at the end of the movie, because we didn't really know each other, we start talking in the movie theater for a while, actually 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, a couple hours. She said that this theater was like a really tiny little theater in Sherman Oaks, with almost no one in it. So when we're done talking, it's already about 2 a.m. We decided to leave and we found out that we are locked in the movie theater. The people has forgotten us inside. So it was pretty interesting. So, not like in my movie, we got locked in for like an hour, maybe something like that, enough to go check the concession stand and all that. But a few months later, I've been working on another movie for a very long time. But you know how movie work. I mean, you're always looking for some more budget, and you're waiting for talents to enter. I mean, it's like a long process, and I was just bored of waiting and waiting and waiting on everything. And a friend of mine told me, you know what? A filmmaker makes films, and for some insight, I mean, that resonated in my head, and I was like, he's probably right. I need to make a film no matter what. So I got up of my bed at 1 a.m. I was like, you know what? I'm going to make a movie in 6 months, a feature film in 6 months, no matter what, no one will stop me. And I thought about this, this date that I've been on a couple months earlier, and I thought, well, that's probably the best story I can tell because it's an easy setup. It's only a one location, movie, mm-hmm. a couple talents. Plus, of course, you add a few additional talents, but, mainly a couple people. So that should be a fairly decently, easy production to start. It ended up not being that easy, but it's always the same. But I thought it was a good setup. So the next morning I was up and trying to contact a lot of friends, investors and whatsoever, to see if they were in. And willing enough, they were in way more easily than on the prior project, probably because the story was more appealing. I mean, more easy in a, yeah, more appealing and more, easy to make, and everybody could relate to that. Mm-hmm. So, and then the whole preparation process. I mean, you know, I had to write the script, of course, and then the whole preparation process started. And basically, when everything was when the script was done, from production to today, took us like a year. So a little bit more than my 6 initial months, but still pretty fairly decent for a feature film. So yeah.
In hindsight, do you think it was easier or more difficult to make a romantic comedy versus, say, a thriller or something along those lines?
Well, it's interesting because with that setup, it could have gone both ways. So literally, because two people stuck in a movie theater, it could go horror movie or romantic comedy. So, but the problem is that I think I'm better at doing romantic comedies. I know this genre better than horror movies. And also I wanted to, the setup, so everything happens actually in a movie theater. I mean, half of the movie happened in a movie theater, and the second part, I can't really tell where, but locations, they are very romantic locations, and but at the same time, locations that places that are kind of dying nowadays, because unfortunately, movie theaters, unless they are multiplex, are slowly dying, and I thought, yeah, that a romantic comedy would be like a great fit for those locations that. That we found. So, but to be very honest, when I was writing the script at the middle of the script, where I was a little bit stuck in where to go, I really thought, well, maybe you should change your mind and go for a thriller or a horror movie. And then finally, I was like, yeah, what you know best, and you'll be fine. So then I found a twist that made everything work together. So. Yeah.
My favorite moment in the movie, and I, it's a very charming, sweet film, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a moment where, you know, you have a romantic comedy, and really the sexiest, most romantically shot scene was when popcorn was popping. And I was kind of wondering, was that your sex scene?
that's interesting. well, it's funny because, you know, we've all been to plenty of theaters, and we always see this popcorn machine, and there is something very romantic, something very sexy with it, because in a way I feel that everybody has always wanted to play with this machine play, like, not in a sexual way, to play like to make popcorn. And it's true that we are at a point of the movie where the two characters stop bonding, and so I don't know if I would say like the first sexual scene, but probably the first bonding scene. Yeah, the first intimate scene, probably, because first of all, in the movie, that's where when they start, that for the first time they do something together, and there is something very graphical and pictorial with this scene. So yeah, in some way like that, I wouldn't say sexual, but not too far.
It's a very loving shot of popcorn. I'm telling you, it made me hungry, and like wondering where's my wife at, because I should hold her right now. I mean, it's one of those.
Yeah. Yep. Well, so that will please all the popcorn people who sell popcorn. Maybe I'll make people buy popcorn more.
There you go.
I don't know.
There you go.
That will be my forte.
Do you plan on screening this film in the theater you shot it in? Was it because I assume it was an actual theater you shot it in. You didn't build any set for it.
No. We shot actually in a theater. So that was a challenge because all the theaters still screen movies during the day. So we didn't have the budget to close down a whole theater. So basically we were shooting at night after the last screening. So a very long night from like 11 p.m. to 9 a.m. That was a challenge production-wise, but at the same time, it was very interesting to shoot in this closed environment when everybody was already asleep. I mean, like, we were really free to do anything we wanted, and shooting at night in the theater probably give some more depth for the crew, for the cast. We were really in situation, basically. We're really stuck in the theater at night, like the two characters are. So we're not bothered by anything else around. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenging shoot, but a very nice one.
Raquel Schenk, she was a true standout. I mean, real, just truly a standout. And Luke Brandon Field, he complimented her well as this couple find their footing throughout the film. So how did you decide these two were perfect for Zoe and Alex?
I met these two people totally random. I mean, they didn't know each other, but I met Raquel, actually, interesting, because I met her. I mean, if you watch the movie, that will sound interesting. Because I met her at a dinner party where we were supposed to talk about books. I can tell that it's not a spoiler, but in the movie she owned a bookstore. So, and actually I did not remember that story, and she reminded me that later on, so it's kind of a weird thing. But yes, I met her a few years ago, and I don't know, that there was something, I mean, and nothing romantic was involved between us at all. So, but something like a bond, like I knew that I would work with her. And I know it sounds pretty cliche to say that, but I don't know, for some reason, she had a face, she had something different. But, you know, it's Hollywood, so you always say that you're going to work together, and then you have project, and you don't really have always have the time, the right project. But when I had this project, I thought about her right away, and yeah, it went pretty fast. I mean, we talked a little bit. We haven't talked since, actually, but we talked a little bit, and she was all in. And I'm going to come to Luke soon, but the challenge of that was that I had to prepare a movie and to start a movie without having a finished script, because everything went so fast. So basically, I really had to find two people who were really involved in the project and who really wanted to do the project without even reading a script. They knew about the story, they knew where it was going, but usually it's pretty rare that someone would tell you, yes, I'll do it, mm-hmm. even if they start the career, because you want to know what you're doing, but for some reason, they trusted me on that. So I'm very grateful for that. And Luke, I met him through a friend of mine who's an actor also, actually, who's also in the movie in a way. I mean, he's in the short that they're watching during their screening, mm-hmm. David Moscow. And he introduced me, and I really liked what he's been on and everything. And also, he had the difference of not being American. He was he's British. So, and because I was talking about a story that happened to me, mm-hmm. And obviously, as you can hear, I'm French. So I thought it was pretty interesting to have someone who had a different culture than the girl, to oppose both culture. And, also him also, he trusted me on everything very, very fast. And then we met all together, and I thought it was a great match. So we went for it.
Yeah, they work very well together. So,
well, thank you.
As an independent film, your path to release is always much more unique than a studio film. So, what was the journey like for you from gestation to release?
Once again, because I've been developing out of feature films in the past, and I knew the process. And because on this one, I wanted to make things differently, because the goal was to really make a movie, not just talk about making a movie, just really make it. So. Everything, I mean, there was a lot of gamble, a lot of gambling everywhere in every field, because obviously with that kind of a little project and budget, of course, you have to gamble on quite some things. I talked about the actors. I really believe in them, but it's still, when you haven't worked with these people, it's still a gamble. Then the crew too, and the idea was to go with very young and hungry crew, like our cinematographer Anthony Brooks, our composer Anthony Willis. I mean, it's only Anthony. It's an Anthony movie. Everybody is an Anthony. Anthony Sabe, Anthony Willis, Anthony Brooks. That's quite a funny. Then we had to build a nice crew, and actually, all of these key people. My co-producer Matt DeMarco was phenomenal, and I've never worked with him before. So I'd say I was lucky in a way, because all these gambles were paid off. But it's a challenge. It's long, it's tough to make a movie. You go through a lot of unexpected things, especially in preparation. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the whole shoot went fantastically. I mean, honestly, we didn't have any problem during while shooting, so that's a luck. But I can't say that about the prep. I mean, but I was ready for that, because when you do that kind of project, you don't really have all the cards in hand. I mean, you have to, some of the gamble don't always work, and you have to find out a solution. But luckily, yeah, the crew made it work, and so far, so good. We've been pretty lucky on everything, but it was pretty tough overall.
Are you excited? You sound so excited for the release.
Yeah, of course, because it's always a little bit strange. It's kind of whether you do a short or a feature film, at the end of the day, it's the same kind of a feeling. You've been working for years now on something, and it's almost all gone in a couple hours. I mean, after the premiere, I mean, of course, we will keep showing this movie everywhere. But the pressure is coming down. I mean, yes, of course, I'm excited to, you know, when when you have so many people involved in a project, mm-hmm. it's always a fantastic turnout when you can finally show what you've done with during this past 2 years. So it's the accomplishment of a long process. But yeah, I'm very glad we're here now.
I'm already going to tell the audience what the movie is about, but how would you sell it mm-hmm. to an audience? What do you say to people when they ask you, what is One Last Night about?
First of all, I think it's a movie that I'm going to tell give a little pitch, but I think it's mostly a movie that everybody can relate about because it's the story of Zoe and Alex, two people on a first date who get locked in a movie theater overnight. And as they search for an escape, they will encounter some kind of an unexpected twist mm-hmm. that will change the whole course of the night. And these two people have met previously online, so on an app or a website, like people do nowadays, me included.
Yep.
So I think everybody can relate to this story because I feel that most of the people have been on a date to a movie theater, and most of the people have, at least of my generation, I guess, from 20 to 40, have used online dating, and you never really know what you expect because when you first meet the person, even though this person can be great online, you can have a big surprise when you meet the person in person. And yet it's to oppose this very new technology with this very old date. So online dating with going to a movie theater. Yeah, that's what I can tell about a movie, if you like.
It's good.
If you like stories about dating that goes a little bit wrong, well, you should go see this movie because nothing goes very well during a big part of the movie.
And you're now playing festivals, so people can hopefully look for it to come to their town soon.
Yeah, so we just had our premiere this morning at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, and we'll have another screen tomorrow at Film Festival. But slowly we'll go to other festivals, and we are in negotiation now for distribution. So hopefully it will be out there very soon. So yeah, absolutely.
That's great. So what's next for you after you are done with this and you wash your hands of the release and everything else? What do you have next?
What's next for me? I'm going to sleep for like a month. and then I'll probably go back to the previous project. That's interesting because so the one I've stopped working on when I decided to make this movie because I've been working on this one for too long. Mm-hmm. And now I suddenly have more energy to work because I really love this new project too. But I feel that I needed to have something in between to move on. So I'll probably go back to this this all new project that is called Sunny and Ray. And try to finally make it work, make it happen.
That's awesome. Well, I wish you the best of luck. Again, very charming film.
Well, thank you very much.
And best of luck at the festival, too.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, take care, Anthony. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with director Anthony Sabé of One Last Night. I enjoyed it, and I hope you will, too. And if you love movies, I mean, it's centered around people who love movies, and that's kind of where it comes from, as well as gaming theology. I don't really know what else to say in that respect without giving you more than you need. It's interesting. It's funny. It's quirky. I enjoyed it. Hopefully you guys will too. Look for it at festivals and also I'm sure on video on demand shortly thereafter. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We try to bring you interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema where we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Our normal show has a new episode every single week and is also available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head to the theater to see One Last Night, buy popcorn.